If you want to support the show, you can go to mwpnews.com/support, where you can pick up my latest book, Succession Planning, and all my other books that have previously been released on Kindle for only $2.99 each. Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, it's morning because it's Sunday morning this goes up. And welcome to 30 Minute Reviews. I am Adam. I had a brain fart there for a second. So, it's a slow news week. Slow news week, which always sucks. But let's just get right into it. This week in podcasts, on Tuesday, you can join me on the Backlog Files for a discussion of Pokemon Pinball, Ruby, and Sapphire. On Wednesday, on Beware of Spoilers, I'll be discussing The Fall Guy. That'll be late in the evening. So I'm going to an advanced screening. Thursday in the morning, I'll be talking about the finale of The Bad Batch. Friday in the morning, I'll be talking about the 8th episode of X-Men 97. Saturday in the morning, I'll be talking about the 9th episode of The Girls on the Bus. We'll be doing the 8th episode today in the evening. I'll be aware of spoilers. The rest of the schedule is TBA, because the screening availability later in the week is not clear yet. The other big release that's wide this week is Star Wars Phantom Menace, and I'm not going to do a review of Phantom Menace. I'll be aware of spoilers, that'd be a waste of everyone's time, because the movie's been out for 25 years. I am going to see it because of the Acolyte preview that's tacked on to the end of it. So we are going to talk about that next week on 30 Minute Reviews, but for the sake of Beware of Spoilers, I don't know what else is coming out yet, because I saw the TV Glow comes out, but I don't know if they're going to be playing it at the theater I go to, which creates a bit of a problem. So, let's just move on to, you know, our next thing. Winners from the indie space. Now, we have a few festivals going on. Atlanta is still going on, and today is the last day of, well, today being Sunday, is the last day of San Francisco Film Festival. As of recording this, we have not gotten the list of winners from the San Francisco Film Festival, so we'll talk about that next week. As for WorldFest, also known as the Houston International Film Festival, they have a lengthy document on their website, and I applaud this, of everything and where it, you know, stands up. And they have tons of categories. If you're interested in this, I would check that out, because you got a nice list of things that you can look for at other festivals, if you're going to a festival in your area. That said, let's just talk about the big names. The Portuguese movie, Summer Rain took home Best Feature, Best Director, and Best Cinematography. Best Short Film went to Under, and Best Screenplay went to Miss Dixie is a Pixie. The Tribeca Film Festival has announced its gaming slate, with the immersive slate of titles still to be announced this coming Thursday. Of note, the gaming slate includes Neva, the upcoming title from the studio behind Game of the Year winning Gris, Skate Story from Devolver Digital, and Goodnight Universe from Nice Dream. You may know Nice Dream as a studio that did Before Your Eyes, the indie eye-tracking game. Apparently, Goodnight Universe also uses eye-tracking technology. So let's just get into this week's stories. Story number one, there's a Kingdom Hearts series in development at Disney. It's a light news week, but it's a big week for news and rumors for Kingdom Hearts. And usually we don't talk about rumors, but it's a light news week. So we're going to talk about rumors. And I don't really count this as much of a rumor, because it is Daniel RPK, who is noted for being accurate a lot of the time. So we'll see if this comes to pass. He provided two major updates about Kingdom Hearts, which has been kind of not dormant, but it's been a while since we had a concrete anything really happen with them. And the first thing is that there's an adaptation for of the franchise in the works for Disney Plus. This is not the first time we've heard about an adaptation of Kingdom Hearts. There have been rumors and other things about it going back to the mid-2000s. I remember hearing about a Disney Channel original series or a Disney XD show that the Disney higher-ups were not pleased about because it didn't portray the Disney characters in the best light a lot of the times. He also previously reported on one in development back in 2020, but that never materialized. And there's clearly a market for Disney crossover material, since Disney Plus was developing an adaptation of Kingdom Keepers with Kevin Smith before that got axed. So it's clear they want to do something that involves their various properties interacting. And then Lorcana came out, and that's kind of showing that too, because it's like a card game with all the Disney characters. So they clearly want to do this, and they want to capitalize on that. And then also Descendants is one of their biggest, you know, other franchises. The Descendants, it may be for younger, like, tween girls, but it does good business for Disney. So it's clear they want to have these characters interacting with each other, and they want to find a way to do that organically. Kingdom Hearts does fit that bill. Here's the problem, though. This comes off as clear trend chasing, as the market for video game adaptations has taken off since 2020, and there's already an adaptation of the narrative of a good amount of the games that it can be compared to. We can look at the manga version of these, which were comedic takes on the story without, you know, the gameplay, obviously, because it's a book. But it does broadly tell the story of, I think it was One Chain of Memories 2, 3, and I think 358 had one too. So inherently, if we're going to do an adaptation of the mainline games, we inherently have something that's going to be compared to. We're going to look at these and be like, oh, is this as good as the other things that we've had so far? And I think the issue is, if you hone too close to the tone of those, it can come off as kind of like, oh, you're just aping that. Because the tone of the manga was inherently different from the tone of the games. Not by a substantial margin, but by enough where it's different. And it stood out from the games while telling the same story. So that there you inherently have that. Then there's the question of, where do we place this story? Because I think that's also a fundamental question that does need to be addressed. Because if we're not doing an adaptation of this, of Kingdom Hearts 1, Chain of Memories 2, 3, maybe Birth by Sleep, and then even so, how do you incorporate that? Because Kingdom Hearts is kind of a weird story, not in terms of being overly complex, even though people say it is. It is kind of the non-sequential storytelling and the way it jumps around protagonists is not exactly the most user-friendly when it comes to adapting it as a TV show. You want to have a straight through, here's our protagonist, here's why that's important. And then it's like, if we're going to skip and do an entire season about Aqua, Ventus, and Terra, then why, and that's going to come back into play later, what's the point of this? And it may get people less interested to have that in there. So all that being said, the question becomes, how do we adapt this? And I think there are two ways that you can do it. One is you set it way in the past, and you do kind of what they did with, what were those other games? Unchained X, Missing Link, and all of that. Where it's set way in the past, it's just adding context for who these characters are, and who Xehanort is, and all that. That would not be a terrible idea, I don't think. It's not the best idea, I don't think, but it's certainly not terrible. Because again, you're not going to have the characters everyone loves, and then passing back and forth between that and the games might get a little dicey, which is unfortunate. Because then it's like, well, where are these guys? If people do watch the show and fall in love with these characters, it's like, oh, well, where are these characters that I've fallen in love with? And that is, you know, a valid concern if you're going to be doing this passing back and forth. That's number one. Number two, the passing back and forth does not end well historically when going from streaming to another medium. We've seen this fail multiple times, so why would you want to have something in continuity? And then number three, the question is, what about doing something after the fact? After three, after four? And then the question is, it's like, are we going to do this as the backstory for the Sterilitsa character? And it's like, okay, is that going to be the case? But then we don't know what four is. We don't know how that character is going to be welcomed or be liked by the fan community. And I think that is a valid concern as well. Because it's like, you don't want to have this character, and then it's like, oh, so we're going to have this show be necessary backstory for understanding this. There's a lot of questionable decisions that go into this, and I'm like, why would you bother doing this? And then risk the reputational harm to the franchise that you're obviously trying to do. Because Kingdom Hearts is probably one of Disney's most profitable game franchises as of right now. While they do have Marvel stuff, and they do have, like, you know, DC stuff, not DC, they do have Marvel, they do have Star Wars and all of that, I think what it comes down to is Kingdom Hearts has the longevity because we're already 20 years in. Like, they sold 6 million copies of Kingdom Hearts 3 on multiple consoles, and we'll get to that in a little bit, but does this impact that going forward? It's an odd thing to do. I think that, like, the recipe for success when it comes to video game adaptations lately has been to take the, you know, for lack of a better word, the 21 Jump Street approach. Where 21 Jump Street is adapting a franchise that, like, look, people don't particularly care for. Like, people liked it in the time, but people didn't particularly, like, oh my god, 21 Jump Street, how great is this? So, when it comes down to it, you can make changes and not have people flipping out over it. And then on top of that, when we look at things like, you know, and the other thing to take into consideration is take something like Fallout, which has been acclaimed for it being this kind of like, you know, it's telling a story in the same universe, but it's not touching on anything we already know. It's not going into characters we know from Fallout 3 or New Vegas or 2 or, you know, 4. It's just, it's telling its own story. It's in Los Angeles. This is, you know, what's going on here. And that kind of recipe for success with video game adaptations has been working. The one-to-one adaptation has really only worked so far with The Last of Us. But besides that, everything else has gone in its own direction. And I think one of the other things that could work, and the reason why The Last of Us works, is because The Last of Us has a narrative that works as a movie, not just a video game. And I think the approach that they should look to for this is to find a franchise that people haven't really cared about for a while and be like, we're going to bring this back. So my thing, if I'm Disney, because Disney Interactive already owns it, Spectrobes is a great one that you can do as a limited series on Disney Plus. Like, that would be a strong one. And the thing is, too, if you're Disney, look at things like that. Because Percy Jackson is something that, like, look, Percy Jackson and the Rick Riordan universe of these similar kind of books is popular, but I haven't heard people talk about Percy Jackson in a long time. Then the show came, and it's just like, holy shit, look at how big this is. And it was a moment. And that's what they should be looking at. It's like, I'm looking at, like, the other ones I always go to are Mercenaries, which may not be a Disney property because it is it's like an 80s action kind of homage. That would be a strong one to do. And then what was the other one I had written down? Like, Pokemon, obviously, not going to do, but, you know, Parappa the Rapper is another one that would be very strong. They could probably get that from Sony for reasonably cheap. And the other thing is, too, it's like, if we're going to retell the story of Kingdom Hearts, don't just retell the story of Kingdom Hearts. Remake them from the ground up. Because that's the thing, is that it's like, you can play Kingdom Hearts 1, 2, Chain of Memories, all that, on the PS5, on the PS4, on your computer, on the Switch. You can play in all those places. The problem is, they still very much feel like a product of when they were made. They're very much a product of, okay, this game came out in 2002. It feels like a game from 2002. And then as you play through and you get more and more, you know, games online, oh, this really improved. And they really fixed, you know, this mechanic or something like that. Like, give me a ground-up remake of these games, bringing them in line with the same kind of gameplay mechanics and all of that. I'm not saying change, like, Chain of Memories into away from the turn-based cards. Keep it like that. But, like, very much so when you play these games, they feel like products of their time. Bring it all current. Bring it all the way it is. And then if you want to make story modifications to adjust some of the things that don't always 100% line up, do that. I saw someone speculated a good way to do it would be, like, we're headed into this new Lost Master saga where everyone's going to this alternate universe, like the realm of fiction. If both sides see the other as fiction, what if, for backstory's sake, the version of Kingdom Hearts that Yozora played, because he recognized Sora in Kingdom Hearts 3, what if that's the version that's the full remake? That could be an interesting approach to do this, too. And then you can have differences and all that, but still have the fundamental story down. This actually brings us to story number 2. Kingdom Hearts 4, according to him, is slated for release next year. And we haven't heard anything about Kingdom Hearts 4 in a while. Square has been on this side of things, like this kind of, you know, big budget JRPG front, has been very much in the Final Fantasy game lately. They had Final Fantasy 16 and 7. Rebirth, and now they're, you know, we don't know what's coming next. And if you look at their release slate, they really don't have anything for the rest of the year besides Octopath Traveler 2. So the question is, what's coming next? And I think Kingdom Hearts 4 is the most likely option for next year. The question is, where do we game out that this is going to come out? There are rumors. We know for a fact that GTA 6 comes out next year, but the question is where? There's rumors that say Q1. The initial rumor says March, and we also have the rumor that the Switch 2 is coming in Q1. So the question is any of that accurate? We don't really know for certain, because it's all speculation and all of that. I don't know if Kingdom Hearts 4 wants to come out in that initial launch window for the Switch. I mean, it could, especially if the Switch can run as much as it does, and it's going to be one of those cloud games, and it actually works. It could be a strong Switch third-party title to launch with. The issue is, what about, you know, GTA? Because if you try to compete with GTA, you're not going to win. And arguably, if you don't come out before GTA, it may not be worth coming out next year at all. Because I think it's going to be the game to buy this holiday season. And the only game that I can see on the slate right now for next year that could viably compete with GTA is Pokemon Legends Z-A, because that's a very different target audience. I don't know where this kind of lines up in all of that. It's an interesting situation to deal with, because it's like, do you put it out in the holiday and then risk being trampled by GTA? Do you put it out right before and then be trampled by it after? Like, it's an odd place to be if you're trying to release this game. Or do you just wait till 2026 entirely and not have a release at all? I think the industry can't afford to go an entire year with no major releases that would end up competing with GTA. That would be silly. So it should be a weird situation all around. Story number three, speaking of weird dates, we have proof that Sony has zero confidence in Kraven the Hunter. Kraven the Hunter is probably dead on arrival. Now, there have been signs that this movie was going to be bad for a while. The initial release date was, hang on, I have it written down here. What was the original release date for this nonsense? October 6th of last year. Then SAG went on strike, and they moved it, because of the SAG strike, to August 30th. This would likely indicate massive reshoots, because Dune Part 2 and Passengers both also got delayed because of the strike, because they couldn't do press tours, and they only got delayed a few months instead of almost a full calendar year. Now, here we are, you know, 9 months after that delay, because they delayed it back in July, and they moved it again to December 13th, 2024, keeping in mind that last year we already had a trailer by the time it was delayed a full year. Now, the thing about this new date, the new date is terrible. The new date, December 13th, is, hang on, I messed up my paper here. December 13th is in the middle of probably a very stacked December, one of the most stacked Decembers in terms of quantity of releases in a long time. The week it comes out, its opening is Lord of the Rings, War of the Rohirrim, which I'm fairly certain I mispronounced. Then they also have Sonic 3 and the prequel to The Lion King coming the week before. The week after. So it's got no room to breathe. On top of that, there's a major R-rated historical epic from Ridley Scott coming just prior. So, now, this just tells me, and it tells everyone, really, like there's no hiding the rationale for this. It entirely comes down to they want to give a reason why it bombs when it does, and that's going to be, oh, well, it came out against all these other juggernaut movies. How could it possibly do well? And it's like, look, you had a reasonably strong date to begin with. You had a reasonably strong date to start out. You moved it off of that twice because you lack confidence in the movie. You lack the general belief this movie will be well-received, so you're just like, fuck it, dump it somewhere else. That way we don't have to deal with, you know, we can blame something else for it failing. And then there's the bigger issue. There is a much broader issue in play. And that is namely the question of what is going on with the Sony universe of Spider-Man characters, or Sony universe of Marvel characters. Because who is, what do they still have coming? Like, this November, and that's the thing too, is that they're only a month apart. Because you have November, that last week, the first week of November, and then you have, for Venom 3, and then you have this 6 weeks later. I'm just kind of confused as to why you would do that. And then it's like, okay, so Venom's ending with Venom the Last Dance. What about the one that comes, what about Kraven? So Kraven's the other movie, and then after that, we have nothing. There's nothing on the slate. There's nothing currently being shot. There's nothing currently known to be in development. What comes next? What's the next thing that's going to happen? And we don't know. And I think we're looking at the end of this iteration of this, we're going to try and make a villain universe, because I think this has just been a colossal failure for them outside of the two Venom movies that did very well. It's a weird situation to be in, and quite honestly, it's an unforced error by Sony. Next up, we have a small story, two smaller stories. PAL World reveals the new PAL, This is Nox. It is a Glaceon mixed with an Alolan Vulpix mixed with Eevee. And I understand these designs were likely done a long time ago, and the roadmap was likely set internally well before the release earlier this year. But if you are the studio that makes this game, you gotta realize that there's all this controversy regarding allegations of plagiarism. And to release this as your first post-release PAL, it's a choice. It's a bad choice. I'm not entirely sure why they did that. Story number five, Aaron Sorkin is working on a follow-up to The Social Network. It's a spiritual successor, quasi-sequel, he called it, same thing. I included this because I knew the fifth story, and I like the idea of this happening. Aaron Sorkin of The West Wing and The Newsroom, and also The Social Network, is working on a sequel because, according to him and anyone with a functioning brain, Facebook is to blame for a lot of the problems of the last 5 years, specifically calling out January 6th attack on the Capitol that was brought on by former President Trump supporters who were misinformed about the election and thought it was stolen when it was, in fact, not. Politics aside, I think this is a great idea. I have two notes, though. Don't do it if you don't get back Jesse Eisenberg as Mark Zuckerberg. Don't do it if you don't get back David Fincher to direct. Coming to theaters this week, it is the first week of the summer movie season, which is going to be on the light side because of the AMPTP severe mishandling of both WJ and SAG negotiations. The first two releases are Star Wars Episode I, Phantom Menace, and The Fall Guy. The Fall Guy is a new adaptation of the Lee Majors-led show from the early 80s about a Hollywood stuntman who uses his skills to work as a bounty hunter. The new version has the role of Colt Seavers taken on by Ryan Gosling as he tries to save the production that he is working on when the lead actor gets into some shady dealings. Early responses to this have been positive, with an 89% on Rotten Tomatoes and 78% on Metacritic, which is just 1 point below Dune Part 2. The screening of Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, will include a special look at The Acolyte, the upcoming Star Wars show on Disney+. Coming to physical media this week, there are several major Disney+ shows being released in limited-run 4K Steelbook. This includes Moon Knight and Falcon and the Winter Soldier from Marvel Studios, and Obi-Wan Kenobi in the first season of Andor, all on Tuesday. These are all must-buys, I think, especially considering it does eliminate the need to have Disney+ if these shows were to go missing. And also coming to DVD this week are Madam Web and Mean Girls, both of which were early releases this year that have since been released on physical media. I will be picking up Madam Web because I don't know how long this is going to stay able to watch because it's not a great movie, and I feel like this is something that Sony pulls and makes it kind of lost media after a while. Last week at the box office, I forgot to do this. Challengers took home number one with 15.0 million, followed by Unsung Heroes, a newcomer from Lionsgate, at 7.75 million. Godzilla and Kong, the New Empire, stay steady at number three with 7.2 million. Civil War drops all the way to number four at 7.0 million. And Abigail drops to number five with 5.25 million. So, that's it for today. Oh, Spider-Man, we'll do that next week. We'll catch up with the Spider-Mans next week. Until our next episode, have a great rest of your week.